What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's David and Isaac. This is the Sports Ethos Grizzlies podcast. We are back because a cold has been kicking my butt, non-COVID related. I work in the medical field. I get tested twice a week. So it is not COVID, just a cold, but it has been enough that I can't talk for more than a few seconds without coughing my head off. That makes it impossible to do a podcast. But a lot of good stuff has been going on for the Grizzlies since the last time that we were here.
Yeah, man, the Grizzlies get the win 118-88 over the Detroit Pistons last night. And one thing I want to say, and this might not be the case going forward, things can always take a downturn. But one thing that we've seen from this team, even going back to last year, is they've been disappointing in games like this. There have been times where I think twice last year, Oklahoma City Thunder came into the FedEx Forum and beat them, and then they went on the road. I think the next week it lost to them again. Same thing happened this year to Oklahoma City Thunder, even though they were playing a little bit better than they came in here and beat the Grizzlies. Grizzlies have been known to play down the competition at that time. And now, I mean, we saw last night, they came out and handled business the way they were supposed to. I mean, when you play a 7-win, 7-29 team, this is the result that you're supposed to get. And they came out from the jump, man, and really took care of business and allowed guys to get some rest. I mean, they're in the middle of a 5- and 7-game stretch, and you'd like for this game to get some guys some rest. I know they set Desmond Bane out in this game. We'll see what his status will be on Saturday. I think they just kind of looked at this game against the Pistons and saw, well, this is a game that we feel like we can win. We can rest him because he had been dealing with the quad injury. He got kicked in the thigh back in the win against the Phoenix Suns out in Phoenix. And he's been kind of dealing with that, getting treatment on the sidelines. But he played through it. I think they just saw this as an opportunity to get him some rest. So not playing last night gives him like 3 days off before Saturday. I think he'll play on Saturday, but I think they just kind of set him out in this game. But again, man, Grizzlies came out and took care of business, and it's a business-like win. I mean, when you're a good basketball team, really good basketball team, this is what you're supposed to do against these type of teams. And the Grizzlies handle business, put 188-18 on the board and only giving up 88. Ja Morant with 22 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, a block, 10 of 19 from the field, 2 of 2 for the free throw line in only 25 minutes. And I think they said that him and Zion are the only guys that age to ever have that type of game in under 25 minutes. I thought there was a stat that I saw this morning. I think that's what I read. So, I mean, that's tremendous, man, to have that stat line in only 25 minutes. Usually playing 37, 38 minutes. Imagine what he would have done if he had played that amount of minutes. So, almost a double-double, man. 22, 9, 6 assists and a block, man. Another big night for him. Dylan Brooks returned. Pretty good return, man. 18 points. We have 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Just filling the stat sheet, 8 of 17 from the field, super efficient. You always talk about the efficiency with Dylan. Efficient last night, 8 of 17 from the field in 25 minutes. So you look at the starters, man, 29, 25, 21, 28, 26, everybody under 30 minutes. And that's kind of like what you want to see from a game like this.
Yeah, man. Zaire Williams getting his first career start coming out in that first quarter just looked great.
Man,
you know, I unfortunately – Got called out. I didn't get to catch the second half of this game live, so I had to come back and watch it on film. But, you know, the differences that we're seeing from some of these guys from day one, even of just this season, not saying day one of their career, but, you know, day one of this season, there were times when Zaire was out there and people were rightfully so questioning, well, yeah, why is he getting minutes? Because he looked like a deer in the headlights. And then, you know, he just came out in attack mode last night, got to the basket a few times, knocking down shots, knocked down a couple threes. He is flashing, or he did flash last night, some of that upside that the Grizzlies were going after whenever they drafted him.
Yeah, man. And you go back to draft night. And we were just about to jump on our live draft show here. It was Hoopball then, now with Ethos. We were doing a live draft show with some of the other guys from around the network. And as soon as we were going on, that's kind of when the Grizzlies were picking and came up Zaire Williams. And I think both of us were a little upset with the pick, a little disappointed. You had guys on the board. We were talking about Moody. Different guy, Boak Knight was still on the board. A lot of guys that we liked that had talked about. And they take Zaire Williams and you kind of think, man, is that really the pick that got the guy that they moved up to get? And we were a little upset. But at that moment, I accepted the fact, okay, well, I'm going to give this guy a chance. It's not the direction that I would have gone, but, I mean, he's now a Memphis Grizzly. He's going to be on this basketball team, so it doesn't make any sense. It's not productive at all. It's just hate on the kid before he plays the game. And I said from the beginning that this front office and his coaching staff decided that they were going to let him be trial by fire with him. They weren't going to put him on a bench. They weren't going to sit him down to the G League. They decided that he was going to get rotation minutes from the jump. And I figured eventually this would pay off. And he's missed some time, and he kind of talked about being able to watch from the sideline and the game slowing down a bit from him. And he's been fantastic since he came back and had his best game as a pro last night. He just had 14 points, 2 steals, 5-8 from the field, 2-4 from three, 2-2 from the free throw line, 25 minutes, a plus 21 in those 25 minutes. And you can just see him use this link to get it in the passing lanes. He's knocking down the three. And, I mean, you can just see why he was a top 10 pick. I mean, you can see flashes of if this guy reaches this ceiling, man, I think it's going to be dangerous for the league that they let the Grizzlies, because the Grizzlies might have another one here. We talk about Grizzlies still in Bane at 30 and mm-hmm. what they've done in the development with guys. If he reaches this ceiling, man, that's going to be a problem, because that's another guy that Grizzlies have that they took in the draft that I think it really be another piece for this team.
I'm sharing my cold with Isaac through Zoom here, man, hooking him up. You know, I've got to take this time right here. You know, we're talking about Zaire. Got to give Kleiman his flowers. I feel like we do that a lot on this show, but the reason I want to do this is the Sacramento Kings. I'm because Sports Ethos is, you know, like essentially a Sacramento-based company. A lot of us are not in that area, but, you know, that's where it was all started from. That's where Brew is from. I've gotten to build a relationship with a lot of Kings fans, and their new GM out there, Monty Williams, has done a great job in the draft. You know, he goes out, he gets Tyrese Halliburton last year, and he took Davion Mitchell this year. And that was kind of a shock to people. You didn't expect Mitchell to go there, or at least I didn't. But he's done some good things with that team, but they've been bad for so long that fan base expects the worst. That's what they've gotten for 15 plus years. And now here we are in Memphis. We dealt with a front office that was questionable, that made some, you know, iffy calls and screwed some stuff up. We dealt with that for a little while. And now we've got a competent front office, and it feels good to, you know, even though Zaire was not a guy that Isaac, neither one of us were happy with the pick. And, you know, if you go back and you want to take a look at that video, you could see it in my face whenever I got on there. Like, I was not at all happy with the pick, but Kleiman has not done anything to make us doubt him at this point. That he's not made a single move at this point that is reason to doubt what they're doing with this front office and this team in general.
Yeah, man, it's refreshing. I mean, because for so long you just expected, just like you said with Sacramento and their fans, the front office to screw it up. I mean, they screwed it up for so long. I mean, they kind of fell into some things in the Core Four era. I don't think that was kind of their vision. It just kind of ended up working out, some of the moves that they made, and I guess you kind of have to give them a little bit of credit for that, but I think they kind of lucked into some things. And I say it time and time again, that front office was reactive. This front office is proactive. And when it comes to scouting and drafting guys, I mean, they've just been fantastic. I mean, there's no way around it. And Zaire is really showing flashes of kind of the potential that you thought he had. I mean, you watch what he did in high school with some of these mixtapes and some of the plays that he was making, and you can see those flashes. If he reaches his ceiling, and I kind of said Brandon Ingram is kind of a guy that I look at and say, well, if he reaches his ceiling, he could possibly be that. And I think you saw a lot of that last night, just using that length to be able to get in passing lanes. And I mean, he's knocking down the three. And earlier in the season, he was kind of, and I think by design, kind of relegated to be like a corner 3-point shooter. He just kind of stand out there and wait for passes. I think now that they've taking the reins off a little bit and let him do a little bit more creating-wise. I mean, there was one move where he kind of crossed over and did a step-back jumper, mid-range jumper. And I'm like, man, if he's doing that at that size, I mean, shots are going to be hard to block because how long and how tall he is. I mean, he could really be a problem at his size and his length. If he could be consistent shooting the basketball and his handles continue to develop, I mean, that he could be a big-time player because, I mean, you see all the size, the attributes are there. I mean, he just has to put it together. And, I mean, right now, I mean, 14 points last night, man, a really, really solid game. He's been put in the starting lineup the last couple games, and he's taking advantage of it. And it's really – you love to see it. because, I mean, this was a guy that a lot of people questioned. I mean, I even see some people that, that write for the team. Even when he came back, I was like, man, I'm glad to see Zaire back. And they're like, why? Like, I had some DMs talking to some people that actually cover the team, and they're asking me why am I excited he's coming back. I think after these two games, I think they see why.
Yeah, that blows my mind, man. I will never.
Yeah, people are already giving up on a kid. I mean, it's been a half a season of his rookie year, kid that was 19 years old. I mean, just let the kid develop. Let him get a chance to play. He hadn't even played badly really yet. I mean, that's – I've never understood how people give up on guys that quickly. It just doesn't make any sense.
It shouldn't be surprising at this point, because you see the way that it has gone down with Jaren, and, you know, the kind of split reaction of people whenever he signed that contract, and you know, just the negative energy that got kind of tossed his way when he wasn't producing at a high level to start off. But give these kids some time. I always go back. Yeah, I've heard the saying, history repeats itself, right? Look at the history of the league, and look how many guys hit the ground running the way that John Morant does. It's not very many, right? Like it happens, but it's not super frequent. There are a number of different guys, and you know, I'll name just a few right here that didn't really start off all that great, that as they had time to develop, turned into fantastic NBA players. Chris Middleton, Fred VanVleet, Julius Randle, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That those guys, you know, Giannis is obviously kind of in a different setting than those other three guys. Yeah. But those other three guys are all-star caliber players that didn't exactly come out of the gate lighting it on fire, and they were able to develop. And Fred VanVleet is putting together, you know, one of the better seasons in the NBA right now. He's playing phenomenal for the Raptors. You know, he's struggling a little bit this year, but that's not the point. The point is those guys didn't come out in their first 2 years killing it. It took them some time to get the speed of the game and develop and you know, get their footing underneath them before they were able to be productive NBA players. And yet a guy comes out and plays three or four games and people are ready to just dump all over him. It's mind-boggling, man. Give the guys some time. I honestly think that this team – I don't know that this team needs to make a trade to be a true competitor. Honest, like that. I think if you rely on this coaching staff and what they've done, the ability that they have shown to develop this talent with these guys, I think that they have everything that they need right now on this roster that they could win a title.
Yeah, and I'm saying, not to turn this into a Toronto Raptors podcast, it's not eat those Raptors, but your point on VanVleet, man, I love him. I think he's extremely underrated for what he does. I mean, that guy is good. And I think a lot of people know he's good, but I don't think he gets the credit to how good he is. I mean, I think he's definitely an all-star level player, man. He's been fantastic for Toronto and what he's doing up there. But to go back to your point about whether this team needs to make a trade, the thing about it is, and you kind of look at the situation, the kind of consensus has been that they need to go out and get a wing. And now when you look at this roster, I mean, you got DB and you know what he brings to the table. Desmond Bane has taken a tremendous leap this year. Talk about him. And now you got Zaire that you just take a number 10. He's out playing well. Kyle Anderson's still here. Like, where are you going to put a guy unless you're going to move a couple of these guys out if you make that deal? Where are they going to play? I don't think this team needs a wing right now. I think this team is loaded on a wing, especially what you're getting for Brooks and Bane right now. If you start getting consistent play from Williams, I mean, I don't think there's any room for a wing. I think the biggest need for this team is a big. I think a center. Steven Adams is kind of that placeholder. I don't think anybody expects him to be the long-term answer here, but I think if you're going to go out and make a move, I think you need to be looking at center. I don't think wing is really where you need to be looking unless you're going to get a superstar player, which I don't think that's the type of move. I don't think they want to break up this entire quarter trying to bring in a superstar guy. Like, we talk about Jaylen Brown and guys like that. If you're not talking Jaren, they're probably – Boston's probably hanging up the phone. And, again, I'm not dealing Jaren either. So, something like that's probably not going to happen. So, I'm with you. I don't think this team needs to go out and make a big move. I think there are some things that you can do to work around the margins, bring in rotation guys, maybe switch some guys out. But I don't think they need to make a major move. I think this team is right where it is, because, I mean, right where they need to be right now. Because you talk about the injuries and all the COVID issues that they've had, and they're sitting here fourth in the West, five games up on the fifth place Mavericks. And you got Utah, got some COVID issues, some injury stuff going on. Man, you could look up by next week and they could be right there with Utah for their third seed. And why are you going out and making a big move? We're in, what's the year four of this thing? And it's been, again, I mean, it's been really, I don't know, man. You just don't usually see what's happening with the Grizzlies. Things don't usually come together this quickly. Of course, you get Ja Morant, and that's a generational talent, and that helped a lot. But you just don't see things come together for rebuilding teams. You talk about Sacramento and how years of ineptitude they've had there. This is special. And I think sometimes we take that for granted, but this is not something that happens every day, what we're seeing with the Grizzlies. We're lucky.
Yeah, 100%, man. I want to get your thoughts on this. This front office has been kind of heading in one direction, right? So they tell us we're developing, and we see this team overachieving year after year. And because of how well they play, we as the fan base, that we as the media, just people that are around this team, people that cover the Grizzlies, that watch the Grizzlies games, we expect that at some point they're going to turn the corner. They being the front office are going to turn the corner and make a move more toward a win now type move, as opposed to these future moves that they have been making. What would a move like that, in your opinion, be?
Man, it's tough. I mean, in the position that they're in, because again, this team is overachieved, like you said, every year, and even more so this year. I mean, they're sitting in a fourth spot and could possibly even challenge for the third spot, which, I mean, that's crazy stuff. Coming into the season with you moving out JV, people thinking that you possibly got to take a step back, that they're probably going to be not as good this year as they're going to be last year. That hasn't been the case at all. And now you kind of have to toe that line. I've been a person that was kind of felt like they should have been a little bit more in on right now than they have been. Not that they should go out and make some dumb move, like go all in, like we saw with the Atlanta Hawks. And now they're kind of backtracking that in hindsight, wishing they had done that. They had the GM on a podcast the other day, and he's kind of said that maybe they shouldn't have gone that route because that doesn't always pay out. Sometimes you have these young guys and you go too quickly. You pay all the money and cap out and bring in all these veterans. It doesn't work out, and then you're in a spot where you can't really do anything. And this front office hasn't done that. So it's a danger of making that kind of move if it doesn't work, because you don't want to – you're sitting in a great position right now with this young roster. You got guys on still on cheap contracts. You're in fourth in the West. And making that kind of move, you put the danger of maybe you get a little bit better, but you're still not – true title contender, and then now you're in a situation where you don't have any flexibility and you can't really make any major moves to kind of change things. And that's kind of where they're at right now. Is it time to make that move? It's a tough situation, man. I don't envy them in being in that position, because I don't think I would do it this year. I think I would wait to the draft. They have those three draft picks, see what you can get done then. I don't think I would. What's going on right now, I just think I would let it ride out, what's going on this season, and see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, then I think I would look to make some moves this offseason. Because, again, I know you're not going to use all three of those first-round picks. So there's going to be something done there. I think that's kind of the thing. I don't think I would do anything major at this trade deadline. I think that's rushing it. I think you just see this out because it's going so well right now. What if the team ends up third in the West? I mean, and you haven't even made that major move yet. So I think you're in a great spot. And I think that gives you an opportunity to kind of wait it out. And I think that's the way I would go.
You know, if you look at the way that the Milwaukee Bucks put that team together around Giannis, they had this ascent where, you know, Giannis, he starts getting better and Chris Middleton's getting better. And then both of these guys are all-star talents, and Milwaukee gets into the playoffs. They can't get over that hump. They can't push it to the next level. They're a good team. They're not a great team. Can't exactly push it over the hump. Then the front office goes out and gets a guy like Holiday. Drew Holiday, because they knew exactly what they needed. They knew without there was no doubt that they needed a third guy on that team that was able to handle the ball, run the offense, go out and get his own shot, and a guy that is not demanding in the, you know, like that offense generally for the most part is going to run through Giannis. Jrue Holiday can play off the ball. If Giannis is off the floor, Jrue Holiday can run the offense. They needed another guy like that. They need, and he ended up being exactly what they needed. But they didn't really rush it there.
Yeah.
They didn't super accelerate their process. They were letting things develop. And in a small market, man, I really, truly think that that's how you have to do it, because you can shoot yourself in the foot. You know, you're talking about that Hawks deal, and now that there's talks, Cam Reddish is a hell of a young talent. Like
and they're talking about moving off of him.
Yeah, like why? Why are you? You know, look, when everybody goes down in COVID protocol, Cam Reddish comes out and he's dropping 30 points a game. He can do it at this level, but because the Hawks accelerated that process, now they're going to have to move some of those young pieces, probably in order to unload some of those contracts that aren't looking so good right now. So there's a fine line, and I'm confident that Kleiman in this front office is going to be able to do it. I just don't know that, you know, I don't think fans are going to be happy with the time frame, regardless of what, you know, unless some sort of miracle happens and the Grizzlies manage to win a title this year. Like, I don't know that the fans are going to be happy with the timeline.
Yeah, that's all pretty much always going to be the case. But I think you need to let this one play out without doing anything major, because you want to see where this group can get you before you start cutting into your rotation guys. Because they made the playoffs last year, but last year was kind of like, okay, we're just sneaking in. We're in the play-in. We're just kind of happy to be there. And they made the playoffs last year. Now – you're fourth in the West. You possibly could beat in the third. See if this team can win a playoff series that's constructed. And because I don't think you want to, again, gut your assets before you find out how far this team can get you. Can they get you to a second round series? I don't think anybody's expecting anything more than that. If they get to the second round, I think that would be fantastic for this year. But I think you want to see if that can happen before you kind of start messing with things. But I think there will be opportunities. Again, they have those three draft picks. They're going to do something. Whether it's at this deadline, whether they do decide to go ahead and make a move then, or they do it during the draft or during the offseason, they're going to make some moves. I don't think there's anything about that, but I don't think you have to make this huge move like everyone was thinking, because I think this team has overachieved so much. You realize, like, you might have those guys on this roster. You just need to continue with the internal development, and I think that's where they're at right now. And, again, I think I'll let this play out, because I think this team can is constructed, can win a playoff series, especially if they get home court advantage, stay there in the top four. I think this team can win a playoff series. And I think that's, go back to last year, I don't think that's something that you expected out of this group. It felt like at that point you need to go out and do something to get over the hump. And I think you might be able to get over that first hump, like basically essentially getting into the second round without doing it.
Yeah, and I really think that that's gonna be what they decide to do. Don't get me wrong. If something comes along and there's a team, I was watching TNT for a little bit last night before the Grizzlies came on, and Charles Barkley was talking about teams that have kind of hit their peak and they needed to go into some form of a rebuild. He mentioned the 76ers, the Trailblazers, and the Boston Celtics specifically. So if Boston calls and they're going to be interested in a package, like say it's Dylan Brooks, Zaire Williams, and 5 first round picks for Jaylen Brown, send it, shipping it out. Let's go. I'm fine with a move like that, but to go and package together 4 or 5 of the pieces that you have right now, the chemistry is so good, this team is playing so well, to completely disrupt that, I feel like that's a mistake. And so, you know, like, obviously Boston is probably not going to take anything like that for Jaylen Brown, but you don't know where their mindset is. You don't know what's going on in that process. So we don't really know what the trades are going to, there's guys, I know you mentioned, not in this show, but you mentioned to me about the national media talking about the fit with Jeremy Grant.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the price is right, I have no issues with that. I like Jeremy Grant as a player. He has shown up there in Detroit that he's able to be inefficient, but he can be a focal point of the offense if need be. And he showed in Denver before he went to Detroit that he can be a secondary piece and he doesn't have to have the ball in his hand that much to be productive. Fantastic defender. I think that he would be a great fit next to Jaren and with this team. But, you know, I think it's all about getting the right price. And I feel like that Kleiman and them have done a great job doing that so far. And I don't see them. I don't think it's going to happen this year. I don't think that we see a big massive trade from them. I think we see something more of a move up in the draft rather than going out and making a huge splash to get a star player.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to get fleeced. This front office, if it doesn't make any sense, I mean, they're very thinking long-term and smart and what's best for the future. They're not going to do something that's questionable, I don't think, or – I mean, from their history, they haven't done anything like that. And I don't see them getting fleeced or making a bad deal. If they make a deal, it's gonna be because they feel like it's the best thing for the future. And I just don't think there's enough information yet. Again, they made the playoffs last year, and that was kind of a situation where, okay, we broke through, we made the playoffs, but we're probably not going to win a series. We can go in there and compete hard and play hard, and that's what happened. They were in all of those games, only ended up winning one. Of course, game one without Donovan Mitchell. But I think you got to get more information on this particular team with the guys that are here now and your core guys that are part of this rotation. What's their ceiling? What can they get you to this year? And if that doesn't work out, maybe you can reevaluate that time. Maybe you say, well, now I know that we don't feel like this particular guy is going to be a part of the long-term future. Maybe we move him out. But right now, I just think by the deadline, I think it's too early to kind of make those judgments. I do think they do something, but I don't think it's going to be anything major. And we are going to get back to the game. We haven't talked about the game at all, but I do want to bring this up quickly before we go back to the game and close it out. I put a poll up about a week ago on Twitter, kind of looking forward to the trade deadline. And you kind of look at the roster and kind of some of the obvious guys that you would think of that they would possibly move. And of course, the two guys top of the list would be Tyus Jones and Kyle Anderson. Of course, Jared Culver is another name. He has a $6.5 million expiring. Maybe even Steven Adams, depending on what you're bringing back. So those are kind of the guys that you would look at if you were going to move, even though I think I would take Adams off that list because I don't think you're going to bring back the kind of the right guy for it. Because, I mean, he's been fantastic. It was late earlier in the season. I think I probably would have felt more that he could be a guy that's going to be moved. I doubt he's moved. But I put Kyle Anderson and Tyus Jones and kind of asked, who do you think is more likely to be moved out? And I kind of knew the way the poll was going to go when I put it out, because I know how fans think and they look at, I feel like Kyle Anderson is actually more likely to be moved or not to be moved. And Tyus Jones is more likely to be moved. And from a fan perspective, a lot of people say that doesn't make any sense, but you kind of have to look at this front office. And we've talked about the way they operate and the way they view things. You look at the situation and fans are like, oh, well, Tyus Jones is more important to what this team is doing right now. This team's in fourth. They're going to be challenging in the playoffs. We need that backup point guard. Tyus has been fantastic. But when you look long-term at the situation, and Tyus has been playing well, and I think that might make it even more likely that he's moved because I think it ups his trade value. He's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. And he's going to get offered a significant amount of money on the open market. And there are even some opportunities, I think, with some teams, you look around the league where he could go somewhere and start. And again, like, I wouldn't blame him at all, man, for going to get that bag and going to find somewhere where you can start. I just don't think the Grizzlies are going to pay him what he's going to be worth on the open market to back up John Morant. I mean, John Morant's going to play 38 minutes a game. He's an all-star. Could be possible first team All-NBA. When you look at guys like that, look around the league and tell me who those guys' backups are. Most of the time, you're not going to be able to say it. You're not going to be able to tell me who their backups are. That's why Grizzlies are not going to pay $8, $9, $10 million to keep Tyus Jones to back up John Morant. Now, if he takes a hometown discount, like, man, I just want to be here, need to do your team to kind of help me develop when I came over from Minnesota. I love these guys. I want to be here. I'll take a discount. Maybe so, but I don't expect him to do that. I don't think he should do that. If he can find a place to get more money and start, man, by all means, go do that. And with Kyle, I think they both could be moved. But with Kyle, I think there's more of a chance that Kyle signs an extension and he's still here than it is with Tyus Jones. Now, this front office, maybe they look at this year and say, okay, well, we're all in, man. We're going to keep him. We're fourth in the West. We need what he's bringing off the bench if we keep him here. But that's just not what we've seen from this front office. And I think if you do ride it out, I think you're going to lose him for nothing, because I think there's the chances of him being back next year are slim to none. So I think it's more likely that Tyus Jones will be moved. And I know in the short term, that seems like it wouldn't be a smart move, but I know this front office and what they've done in the past, unless they completely change course, I think that's kind of what I see. I just don't see them losing an asset for nothing, because that just hasn't been their MO.
Helps if you unmute your mic, man. I think if you look back, the only time that they have let an asset go, and I don't know how much of an asset you can really say that he was, but they had Gorgie on the expiring contract, and we thought
and that was surprising. It was surprising, moved. Yeah.
You know, and they didn't make a move using that contract, but that's really been the only time. The argument to that is, Tyus Jones is not Gorgie. You know, Gorgie is on the back end of his career. Like, he is not a guy that is going to go out and be able to play 30 plus minutes a night. He doesn't have it in the tank anymore. Tyus Jones is still young enough and still productive enough that, yeah, he's going to call for that kind of money in free agency because he deserves it. And so, you know, he is far more valuable of an asset. Him and Kyle both are far more valuable. You know, you look at teams that are trying to win now, and Kyle Anderson is a guy that you could plug in on a lot of those teams. He's a guy that can come in and plays winning basketball. He impacts the game without requiring any type of offensive load. He can score. You know, he showed that last season with Jaren being out and him being a huge part of this offense. He can score, but he does so many other things that contribute to winning. He's a perfect plug and play piece, regardless of what the team. There's not a team in the league that Kyle could go to where he would throw a wrench in the chemistry. He's just that type of player.
No, when you look at teams around the league, I mean, you could see a fit with him for Utah, I think would be fantastic. I think he'd fit in with kind of the way that they play. I think he would be, I mean, there'll be a lot of teams interested in him, teams that feel like they can win a championship now. Milwaukee is a team where I could see him fit in kind of with where they play off the bench. I think he'd be a fantastic piece for them off the bench. So there will be interest there. I think there would have been more interest last year. I think they kind of missed the window to kind of sell high on him last year, but I still think there'll be interest. And again, man, I mean, we just, Gorgie, like you said, is kind of the only example that we've seen of them kind of letting a guy go without cashing in on. Like, I don't know what you could get for a package of Tyus and Kyle Anderson. You just never know. I mean, then you could package the first round pick with them. You just never know what's going to materialize. Like, people talk about deals all the time, and usually deals get made or nothing that anybody's ever come up with. It's just like usually something off the wall or something that you don't even expect and what ends up happening. And people, that's why I kind of hate when people always talk about, oh, well, you can't get this for this guy, or you can't move this guy where he's going to be. And you just never know. And these deals pop up, and you're like, oh, okay, well, I had no idea that would ever happen. And that's kind of what you usually see when it comes to trades. It's usually not what you expect. So we'll see, but I would be surprised if they let those guys walk without getting anything for them if they're not going to extend them. And which, again, with Tyus, I just don't see them paying what he's going to get on the open market, or what he's going to get offered on the open market to kind of back up John Morant with him being the level player that he is. I still think there's a chance that Kyle gets extended, but that's why I kind of think it's more likely if one of them is moved at the deadline, I think it's going to be Tyus. And again, I know that doesn't fit kind of with the win now narrative and where they are, but you got to understand, man, this front office has said time and time again, and their actions have proved it, that everything they do, they view it through the prism of long-term, and losing an asset like Tyus Jones, which you can get something for, there's no doubt about that, without moving them again, it would be short-sighted. And that's just not something that this front office has done over the years. But go back to the game, man. Steven Adams with another big game. 2 points, 14 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds, 4 assists, 1 block. Only bad thing on the night was the free throw shooting, 2 of 6 from the free throw line. 22 minutes plus 26. Again, man, the starters got all played less than 30 minutes, man, with all fantastic. I mean, you look Ja Morant plus 29. You got Dylan Brooks plus 25. Zaire Williams plus 21. And a lot of people were on Jaren Jackson Jr. last night. Like 11 points, 6 rebounds, 1 steal, 2 blocks, 5 of 13 from the field, 1 of 4 from 3, 27 minutes. I know he's not having these big offensive numbers and not having 10 rebounds, but people just don't understand the impact that he has on the defensive end. Just look at the numbers, man. Just go down, delve into the metrics, and you'll see how important. This team, I think, is up to the middle of the pack defensively. And a lot of that has to do with Jaren Jackson Jr. And if you go look at it and see what they're like off when he's off the floor, plus when he's on the floor, you'll see how impactful he is for this team. That's why, even though he only got 11 points, he's plus 28 on the night.
Yeah, second highest on the team behind only Ja Morant. There is so much more to basketball than points, assists, and rebounds. The problem is the media has trained everybody to pay attention to
those
numbers. If you're not hitting these numbers, you're not having success. I go back to the time that Steve Nash won the MVP over Kobe Bryant. Go back and look at their numbers comparatively between the two. And Steve, I'm not here to argue of who should have or should not have won that MVP, but go back and look at that year, the year that, do you remember what year that was, Isaac? I can't remember.
I can't remember exactly what year it is, but that's a great point for what we're trying to make. Why? Because the importance that Steve Nash had to that team, I mean, it was just unmeasured. Their entire offense, they would have been a completely different team with a different guy. What he meant for that team, I think, you can't even measure how much he meant for that team. And that's why he won MVP. People look at these numbers, and again, he's not Jaren's not scoring 20 to 10, and they're like, but he's not producing. And I mean, this impact on the defensive end, again, man, just go look at the numbers. We've talked about it on here. You can go check them out for yourself. This team is a completely different team when he's off the floor defensively. I mean, it's crazy how big of a difference that he makes. Like, you don't see guys that make the difference that he's making for this team defensively this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually hunting the metrics right now while you were talking about it, so I can give you guys the numbers, the difference. With Jaren on the floor, this team, their defensive rating is 106.6. With Jaren off the floor, it's 113.6. That's a
seven point swing, man,
on the defensive end. And I didn't even look at the offense to see, but you're talking about, you know, they're in the top echelon of teams when Jaren is on the floor. When he's off the floor, they're toward the bottom of the league. And so he impacts winning. He doesn't have to score 20 and 10. He doesn't have to, you know, I mean, him being on the floor, his help defense, him being disruptive, the number of different, just his versatility overall is much more impactful than him dropping 20 and 10 every night. And that's, you know, you can argue and say, oh, well, if he dropped 20 and 10, they would be winning, you know, they'd have 35 wins right now. Maybe they would, but they're winning the way that they're winning with him putting up the numbers that he's putting up. And it's, man, I don't even know what to say about it. I can't say enough about it. If you're not convinced that he's impacting winning right now, there's nothing that I can say that's going to change your mind. But just like Isaac said, if you jump into the numbers, if you look at the analytics side of it and what he's doing, what he's bringing to this team, it's huge. It's massive. And that's without those big numbers.
Yeah, after every game, you jump on Twitter, you have people on there talking about, I'm ready to trade this guy for 2 pieces of lint and some chewing gum. I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. Like take him out of this lineup for a game and see what happens with this defense. Like, people just look at numbers. They're box score watchers. They don't really understand the game of basketball and what he brings to the table. It's just ridiculous, man, and I get tired of it. It pisses me off so much that every time I get on Twitter, I jump off, well, he's not rebounding the basketball. He's not scoring enough. I mean, he's not hitting threes. And I mean, we've seen Jaren do that, and there are going to be times again in the future where he does that. He is in a struggle offensively right now, but he's definitely not in a struggle on the defensive end. And again, this team has made leaps and bounds on defense from what they were doing at the beginning of the season. And again, a lot of that has to do with Jaren Jackson Jr. and his impact here on the defensive end. Coming off the bench last night, we talked about the starters, man. BC has looked fantastic as of late. 11 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, 5 of 9 from the field, 22 minutes, a net positive. He had another big game last night, and really good to have BC back, man. Welcome back, BC. Outside of the three-point shot, man, he looks like the guy that we saw his rookie year.
Yeah, they've gone back to letting him do what he does best, and that is, you know, playing around the rim. The game is transitioning to where you want guys in your lineup that can knock down threes, and I feel like year one to year two, they wanted him to shoot more threes, and so stuff changed, injuries happened, the season was funky anyway. But this year, it seems like he's just doing more of the rim running type thing, you know, making the cuts when he needs to, being there to get the rebounds and put them back in. He's not shooting as many threes, and I love it. I love to see it. You know, that's definitely – he was a guy that 2 years ago was on the no-trade list for me. Like, yeah. He was a core part of this team. And then there's been times where he's been on the bench and he's been DNP coach's decision. So it's great to watch a guy bounce back from struggling to he's out here, he's producing, he's being the Brandon Clark that we know that he can be. And I just love to see it. He's one of my favorite guys.
Yeah, man, I love BC and what he brings to the table. It's been weird, man. You don't usually see a guy that kind of has the peaks and valleys that he had. I mean, like you said, I think for me and for you and for most people that cover team and Grizzlies fans that first year, like, man, it's is a steal here where we got him. I think he still is where they got him. I think it's a good move that they got him in hindsight. I think I still make that move. But, I mean, there have been times, like you said, where he's DNP, like, consecutive games where you're not even seeing him. And then there are other times where he's been playing really well and then goes back to the bench. I mean, there's been a lot of peaks and valleys for him for a guy in his third year that you just usually don't see with guys. But really good to see him back out there. And it looks like he's having fun with the game again. And that's a big part of it. So I'm glad to see what BC is doing. Tyus with a huge game off the bench, 14 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and just super efficient, man. He's really shooting the basketball well this year. I always go back to what he said at Media Day about how upset he was with his shooting, his three-point shooting last year. Said he was getting 300 to 400 shots up a day, and you can really tell that paid off because he's shooting the basketball better than he's ever has in his career. And with 6 of 7 from the field, 2 of 2 from three last night, 20 minutes of plus 3. But what one positive about last night is that the extended garbage time and allowed kind of these young guys to get in there. Aldama with 18 minutes, Tilly with 19 minutes. Who else we got here? Even Culver played 6 minutes. Even some of the guys that are on the 10-day contract, Dakota Mathias out there looking like looking like Luka Doncic. I was calling him Dakota Luka Mathias. When he came in, I was like, who's that, Luka out there? He's like built just like the guy. Came in, knocked down 2 threes, man. That was good to see. Get him in a hustle uniform stat. Like, I'd like to see him stick around, man, because he can really shoot the basketball. Daquan Jeffries is a guy that just picked up. He got in, had 2 points. Jared Culver, 2 points. John Tesk is a center that they just picked up. He got 3 minutes last night. He had a rebound and assist. And I do want to mention Melton. We haven't mentioned Melton. His first game back. Struggled on the offensive end, but did a lot of other things. Only had 4 points, but did have 8 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, a block. Did hit a 3, 1 of 6, 1 of 1 from the free throw line. Still a plus 2, and that lets you know that even though how bad he struggled on the offensive end, everything else that he brought in those intangibles were still there, and his offense will come around.
Yeah, yeah, and we know that about Melton. We know that he's another guy that, you know, even when he's struggling offensively, he's going to make an impact elsewhere on the floor to impact winning. So, you know, great to see him back. Glad to see that, you know, the team is getting mostly healthy again. Not completely, obviously, but that's once we get these guys back from protocols, it's going to be interesting to see. I had some other stats lined up, but man, I think this cold is about done me in. I don't know if I've got any more left in me. So, there's one more thing I want to get your thoughts on before we get out of here. I can't get away from this podcast without talking about this, and I don't know if you've seen it or not, but Kendrick Perkins said that Ja Morant has a Michael Jordan ceiling. What are your thoughts on that? Did you see that?
I did not see that, but we all know that Perk is with us, man. He is Grizz through. That's like all he talks about. Like anytime you turn on ESPN, if you see Perkins, He's not going to get off a segment without missing a job Morant and the Grizzlies. And I think he actually watches the games. And that's the thing about a lot of the national media. For some reason, they're still not paying attention to this team. They just don't give credit to, like, I was looking on FanDuel this morning, and I was looking at some of the future bets in Vegas. And the Grizzlies are fourth in the West right now. And I think they have, when you look at the odds to win the West, I think they're like seventh on there. Like, how can you watch what's going on and still have the Clippers and the Nuggets and one other team still in front of them. I can't remember, maybe Dallas. And I'm like, why would you say that other than you're just not paying attention to what's going on? And Perk is definitely does not fit in that category. And finally, we have someone in the media that he's 100% in, man. They could put him on payroll. But as far as the Michael Jordan thing, man, I think the sky's the limit with Ja. I think it goes to something that we talked about earlier about guys not usually coming in and being anything close to where they're going to be immediately. I think that's how you knew how special Ja was going to be, because he came in that first year. I mean, it wasn't what he is now, but he was awesome his first year. And I think then I was like, you knew this guy is going to be special. So I'm not putting any limit on him. I mean, that's lofty the expectations. For my taste, I think Michael Jordan is the GOAT. I know a lot of people disagree. A lot of people now, especially younger people in their 20s, say LeBron. I think Michael Jordan's the GOAT, and there's not any question. So I think that's a lofty goal. But again, man, I think the sky's the limit for Ja. I don't put any cap on
it. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you in the fact that it's definitely lofty. I'm never a fan of comparisons when you're talking about X player compared to, you know, this all-time great, because those all-time greats, man, it's, and especially a guy that is in the GOAT consideration, whether you think it's Jordan or LeBron or Kareem or whoever you think it is, comparing other players to them, to me, it's crazy, because how, like, did you know when Jordan was at North Carolina that he was going to, you know, turn into Michael Jordan? And I think that, you know, the answer to that is no. You know,
no.
He knew that he was good. And obviously the GMs didn't know that Michael Jordan was Michael Jordan. You know, like Steph Curry went after Johnny Flynn in the NBA draft.
Yeah.
You know, look at some of the other names that went in front of him. You don't know when they're in college. And you know, Ja is not in college anymore. He's doing this at the NBA level. He's playing incredible. I don't put a ceiling on him either. I just think it's just wild to me to compare players to all-time greats, because I don't know that this early in their career that you can say that this player is going to get to, you know, whatever landmarks they have to get to be in that conversation. So I just thought it was fantastic that somebody from Memphis is getting that type of recognition. And I wanted to mention it on here, because if there's anybody that hadn't heard that he said that, do you understand what kind of player the Grizzlies have in Ja Morant? And, you know, we've been saying on here for a while that he's generational talent, and that term gets thrown around pretty loosely, but there's not, you know, like, generational talent is not just because you're in the NBA. You know, generational talent is guys, you know, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Michael Jordan. You know, there's more guys on the list than just those, but, you know, we're talking about top of the top, and Ja Morant has got that type of DNA, I believe.
Yeah, and to go back to Steph, I mean, when he was coming out that year, he was like, too small, going to get pushed around. He's coming out of Davidson, and we know he can shoot the basketball well, but will he even be able to get his shot off? And now he saw how the impact that he's had on the game of basketball in the three-point shooting. I mean, nobody expected him coming out. And Ja Morant the same way. I mean, he never didn't get any D1 offers. Too small, too skinny, too weak. He's not going to be able to play high one at D1 level. Look what he's doing already in year three. You just never know with these guys. Because like you said, I mean, Johnny Flynn, he's been out of the league for years now. And Steph Curry has been a generational talent, like you said, with throwing it around. And it's really changed the way basketball game is played. Just his impact is immeasurable. And nobody would have thought that coming out. I mean, nobody. I'm sure he probably didn't even think that coming out. But again, man, those are lofty goals. And again, I don't love comparing guys, especially when you're talking about guys of that magnitude. But again, with Ja, what he's showing right here in year three, I don't think there's any cap on what he could do. I'm not going to do it. And talk about level of talent that we've had in Memphis, man. How about Josh third in fan voting among the Western Conference? Man, that's big time stuff for a market like Memphis. I mean, you talk about smallest market in the league to have a guy be third in fan vote. That just lets you know. It lets me know. That's why I was interested to see those first round of results come out, because I wanted to see how much this was resonate nationally. And you could see it, man. And I'm hoping he can get up past Luka. Of course, Steph Curry was number one, Luka number two. John Morant number three. I think he was a little bit over 100,000 behind Luka. Man, it would be nice to get up to number two. But I think he has a real shot at starting an All-Star game. And that's something I don't know if I ever thought we'd see from a Memphis Grizzlies. So this is something different, people. We've never had this. We've had guys in All-Star games. Z-Bo's been in All-Star game. Mark has been in there. Powell's been in there. But it's never been anything like this. This guy has a chance to be a starter in All-Star games, third in fan voting in All-Star game. And it's coming out of a small market like Memphis, man. That's nothing short of remarkable.
It is, man. We're going to wrap it up. You can get me on Twitter. I'm at DWill2111. The show is at Ethos Grizzlies, E-T-H-O-S, Ethos Grizzlies. Isaac, I'll let you finish up, man. If you got anything else you want to say, by all means, go ahead. But I'm fighting. I'm muting my mic off and on quite a bit here, trying not to cough into it. So I'll let you finish it up and get us out of here, man.
Yeah, man, real quickly, I'm not going to go through the entire spiel like I usually do, but looking at the team stats, man, dominant night on the boards for the Grizzlies last night, winning the rebound, the battle of the glass, 61-39 and 18-10 on offensive rebounds. And that's a lot of that goes to Steven Adams, man, 14 rebounds for him. You look at Ja Morant, 9 rebounds last night. Starters did a good job rebounding the ball. Jaren Jackson Jr. with 6. That's a pretty good number for him. And you look off the bench, BC with 4, Tyus with 4, Melton with 8. So it was a fantastic night rebounding the basketball for the Grizzlies, as they are number one rebound team in the NBA, man. They continue to show that night in and night out basis. I think that's one reason why they've been so successful as of late. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals, ISAAC_Rivals. Grizzlies with a matinee tomorrow, 2:30 p.m., taking on the LA Clippers on the back-to-back. They'll take on the Lakers on Sunday at the Crypt, as they now call it, no longer the Staples Center. Excuse me, man. Just transferring, man. I'm getting the calls over here too. But hopefully the Grizzlies, man, I said coming into this week that I would like to see them go 3-2. You split the East Coast road trip, beat Detroit. You kind of split these. They went 2-0 on the East Coast trip, beat Detroit. So, man, by all means, opportunity to go 5-0, but at best go 4-1, man. Find a way to split these. And that's a fantastic week to go 4-1, which looks like a tough week with 5 and 7 days. That to win 4 of those would be fantastic. And they still got opportunity to win 5. And with Utah's 11.5-point underdog tonight. They got half their team out, and they're on the back-to-back at Indiana tomorrow. Chance for you to make a move at the third seed. But again, man, Clippers tomorrow, matinee 8:30. Lakers on Sunday night, 8:30. We'll be back at some point. It'll be Sunday night for a post-game. We'll see. Or tomorrow, we'll see how that plays out. But until next time, for David, I'm Isaac. This is Ethos Grizzlies. We'll catch you on the other side.
Ethos presentation.